Welcome to the HJ Talks About Abuse podcast. In this podcast, we talk about sexual abuse cases in the hope it will assist listeners in openly discussing topics which have been ignored for too long. This podcast is brought to you by the abuse team at Hugh James. We are lawyers, so we do tend to speak about the legal aspects of abuse cases, but we aren't too shy to speak up about the broader issues faced by survivors too.
Hello, podcast listeners. This is Sam Barker from Hugh James, and I'm joined by my colleague, Alan Collins.
Hi, Sam. Hi, podcast listeners. And it's a pleasure to have you with us, Sam, after your eventful day.
Indeed. I've just rushed back from Eastbourne. I was down in Eastbourne today seeing a client, and it's been rather a journey getting back because of the terrorist incident at London Bridge.
But you're back safe and well, and you are going to introduce our podcast listeners to...
Yeah, indeed.
Our podcast.
So got back here in time to do this, which is great, and was able to read up on Jeffrey Epstein and Prince Andrew and this entire saga on the train on the way back. And that's what we're going to talk about today. We're obviously not in a position to be able to comment on the truthfulness of whatever allegations there are against Prince Andrew, because currently they are just simply that, allegations. But given so much of the media interest in this whole saga, and indeed Prince Andrew's recent BBC interview, which was received terribly, Alan, I would say. Is that fair to say?
Well, let's put it this way. It was, to put it neutrally, controversial. Yep. I think probably that's the most neutral way of describing it. But I thought it would be useful to use the backdrop of Prince Andrew's interview to discuss what isn't often mentioned, relationships in the context of what you and I have to deal with on a daily basis.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to run this by you, Alan. I was listening to another podcast earlier today, and it was a commentary on The Crown and the recent episodes, etc. And somebody in that podcast described Prince Andrew as being fired from the royal family, given that he's had to step down from all official duties. What do you think of that characterisation?
Well, I think a good place to start is where he, in his BBC interview, talks about his relationship with Epstein.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that's where we need to start, because I think that helps to explain, maybe, and some podcast listeners may see where we're coming from, others may not, but I think it's a good place to start by understanding what Prince Andrew was possibly talking about when he talks about his friendship with Epstein. You know, that's come under a lot of scrutiny, it's come under a lot of flack, and it's created a lot of questions. And I think we have to remember, don't we, who Epstein was and the fact that he was convicted.
Indeed.
Of sex offences. You know, you can't get away from that. It's extremely serious. And he was on remand, was he not, waiting to be tried in respect of new allegations.
Sex trafficking allegations, child sex trafficking allegations, and also conspiracy charges were, that's what was awaiting trial and being prepared at the time that he committed suicide.
And so that's Prince Andrew, of course, against that backdrop.
No, that's Jeffrey Epstein.
No, Prince Andrew, against that backdrop of
indeed
what Epstein had done and the crimes he'd committed, was explaining, as I understood it from his interview, why he had this friendship with this man, and he continued, as I understand it, this friendship. Because it got me to think, well, when we deal with victims, survivors of sexual abuse, it's very apparent that the offenders, the abusers, often have been able to do so within the context of relationships, whether we like it or not. Most victims of sexual abuse are abused by people that they know.
That's right.
It's not strangers, it's usually people that they know. And it's very often, tragically and unbelievably, family members who abuse. It's, you know, people who are very close to the child or young person.
And the abuser uses that to be able to manipulate these situations or cultivate situations in which they're able to commit these crimes.
Exactly. In a sense, when you're listening to the accounts and examining the accounts from the victim, survivor, you see that the abuser has exploited relationships with other family members and close friends to do what they then do to the child. You know, they're exploiting other people in order to commit crimes. And sometimes you get instances where it's quite clear that not only is the victim being groomed, but people around the victim have been groomed.
That's right, yeah.
And you hear people saying, well, my mum knew what was going on or whatever, but they turned a blind eye or they didn't want to know. So you can see how paedophiles, sex offenders are adept, I think that's the right way,
yep,
putting it, adept at using other people.
Well, that couldn't be more true of these allegations about Jeffrey Epstein. So, for example, two girls who have come forward, who were sisters, and they came forward with allegations years ago to police about Jeffrey Epstein. And the surrounding circumstances of how they got into that position shows completely what you're saying there. One of the girls, the older sister, was working for him. He'd commissioned artwork from her, etc. She was living in a house, you know, some really expensive house in New York, where she was producing artwork. Anyway, through that working relationship, he got to know this girl's younger sister, who was 16 at the time, and then would contact the parents and say things like, you know, I'm running a workshop for students at my ranch out in Arizona, and would invite the girl there. And then the parents, you know, thinking that it was all above board and fine, sent the girl along. She got there and it transpired that there were no other students there. He also was offering to pay for her to go to UCLA or proposed to do so. And it was using these kind of structures that he was attempting to manipulate it so he could sexually abuse this girl.
Yeah, it's exercise of considerable power.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think that's what we have to understand, that sex offenders are often in a position to exercise power, influence, and control.
Because they know what they're doing, but the other person doesn't necessarily know.
No.
Because of this grooming element and how they do it.
Yeah, people get manipulated. It's not just the victim and stroke survivor who gets manipulated. It can be so often the people around, they get manipulated, they turn a blind eye, or they don't see what's going on in front of them. You know, we see loads of cases where the abuser is so blatant, they abuse in plain sight.
Yeah. That's right.
You know, we see so many cases where they are seen as pillars of the community.
Well, Jimmy Savile would be a perfect example, wouldn't
it? He was a
good
one. Yeah. So you get lots of cases where abusers, you know, commit their terrible crimes in plain sight. You know, it's because adults turn a blind eye or don't want to know or just switch off.
Yeah. And I think that might be more... That might describe better what happens, this Prince Andrew situation of turning a blind eye or some sort of willful blindness rather than manipulation from Epstein's side. There would have been there's no two ways to put it. He was convicted of these child sex offences years before. Prince Andrew knew of that and said that he knew about that in this interview, but nevertheless decided to continue his friendship with Jeffrey Epstein in spite of all of that.
Yeah. Who knows what was going on in Prince Andrew's mind? That's not our place to go, so to speak. That's not what this podcast is all about. But in turn, it raises another interesting question. It's got me to think about times when I go to prisons to see clients. So you're in the queue waiting to get into the prison. And if it's a day which isn't just concerned with legal visits, it's not confined to lawyers having to attend the prison to see their clients, you can find yourself observing family members, you know, mums and dads, parents, partners, spouses, also queuing up to get into the prison, sometimes with children too. You know, you think, stroof, you know, when you see all of this, going in to see whoever it is that they've got to see, obviously a family member, husband, son, nephew, whatever it happens to be. And the sort of prisons that we have to go to, the offenders are in for extremely serious offences. And you think, gosh, they are having to come to terms, I suppose, with the fact that a close member of their family has done something terrible, yet they have to find it within themselves, I guess, to still maintain that relationship. You know, what do you do? Do you, if a close person to you commits a terrible crime, do you strike them off? You have no further dealings with them? Or do you somehow try and retain that relationship. I don't know. Thankfully, I've never
been in that position.
I wouldn't want to. This podcast and preparing for the podcast got me to think, because it does create, aside from the main subject that we were talking about here, getting into relationships, you know, what actually are you meant to do? What are you meant to do if someone very close to you commits a terrible crime, goes to prison? Do you just write them off?
I think in that situation, particularly where it's a family member, you know, it'd be something that for each individual that they would have to grapple with. And indeed, you know, who the crime's committed against and what the crime is might well dictate how that relationship goes forward. I think the reason why there's been such this fallout in relation to Prince Andrew, quite aside from the allegations that are made against him, but just about how he doesn't seem to apologise for his friendship with Epstein despite knowing about this child sex charge, is because of the public position Prince Andrew holds and perhaps the office or role that he represents. And I think that, you know, he probably should have exercised some more probity and critical thinking about who this person is that he, you know, is sharing, you know, he's going on holidays with, he's staying at, being hosted by him at these mansions across the world, etc.
And maybe that's where the line has been crossed.
And it'd have to be, I would have thought, in that circumstances. That's what's led to him being stood down or being fired from his official duties.
Yes.
Fired from the royal family.
If you get all your information from
a podcast where people are talking about episodes of The Crown.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there we go.
I can remember, this is going down memory lane now, when I was an article clerk, which is many centuries ago. So an article clerk was what you now call today a trainee lawyer, I suppose. I can remember I had to go to court. One of my firm's clients was being sentenced for some heinous sexual offence. I remember that. So I had to go down and assist the barrister who was representing this person, this client. And he was sent to prison. And what you do after the person has been sentenced by the judge, they get taken down to the cells before they get taken to the prison. And it is customary, or it certainly was in those days, after your client had been sentenced, you go down the steps into the cell and you sort of basically say goodbye.
Yeah.
You exchange a few pleasantries and, you know, if the client needs some further legal advice about the sentence, you know, that's the time to briefly mention it. Anyway, so we go down. I go down with the barrister, who then, you know, later on in life became a circuit judge. Can't remember how the conversation went, but it came to the end of the conversation and the barrister shook hands with this client and sort of basically said, well, I hope, you know, things, you know, work out for you, so to speak. You know, sort of general short farewell. I didn't shake hands. Now, I honestly can't remember why I didn't shake hands with the client. But immediately after we came out of the cell, I was upbraided by the barrister and told off by him in no uncertain terms for not doing so. And I think his impression was, rightly or wrongly, that I hadn't shaken hands
on
with
purpose.
This person on purpose with this with this client because of what this client had done. And the barrister gave me a very useful, and he was right to make me think, little lecture saying, it's not for you, Alan, to judge. You know,
it's your client,
your client, and it's not for you to judge. And so, yeah,
that's good advice.
It's good advice, and you have to remember that.
Absolutely. You
have to remember that, and particularly, you know, as time went by, and I had to deal with myself those sorts of cases. So, yeah, it gets you think. So, there's lots of moral dimensions that come out of that Prince Andrew interview. You know, it's got me thinking quite a lot, and that's why I think it's useful to have this podcast.
Absolutely, and I think that the interview was probably a clear misstep by him and has backfired monumentally for him. But going back to the advice you received, I doubt you received that advice over sharing a Guinness as we did last night down the road at Goodman's. What did you think of that place?
Yeah, it was very good. It was a good buzz in there last night, wasn't there? And
It's crazy with Christmas at the moment. You can't hear yourself talking in any places. But anyway, thank you everybody for listening, and tune in next time to our podcast.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Al.
Thank you for listening to this episode of HJ Talks About Abuse. You can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play. If you would like to speak to Alan or I about something you have heard this week, or even if you would like to suggest a topic for a future episode, please do get in touch at aboutabuse@hjtalks.co.uk.